Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the Raiders Insider Podcast on NBCSportsCalifornia.com. Introducing your host, Oakland Raiders Insider, Scott Baer.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Tuesday, May 26th edition of the Raiders Talk Podcast. I am Scott Baer, my co-host Josh Schrock on the other side of the Zoom video conference as we continue to break down what the Raiders have done over the course of the offseason and what we expect from the Silver and Black coming up to the 2020 season. And we ask a question on the top of the podcast each and every week. This one is, give me five Raiders vital to a legitimate playoff push for the Silver and Black so they can get back to the postseason for the first time since 2016 and only the second time since they made their Super Bowl run back when Bill Callahan was the coach. And Josh, this was kind of a fun list to break down. You wrote about it on NBCSportsBayArea.com this morning. Before we get to the list, let's generally talk about their playoff chances as a whole. First question is, now, they were mathematically alive heading into Week 17 last year. They needed lots of help in Week 16, and they got it. But how close were they really to being a legitimate playoff contender last year? Was it a wider gap than we saw, or should they have eventually made it given the fact they were 6-4 earlier in the year?
Yeah, I think the way I look at it is I think they finished right where they should have, right? I think they kind of overachieved based on the scoring differential. If you look at that, they probably should finish 5-11. But then they also kind of threw up on themselves a couple of times and lost games they couldn't have.
Yeah.
So I think when you're 6-4 and you just get blown out by the Jets and lose to Gardner Minshew in the Coliseum finale, you can look at it as bungled. But I thought 7-9 is probably where they should have finished, and I thought they were legitimate ish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if they're in that area, obviously they were 4-12 the year before. To go to 7-9, have a 3-game jump, that's a pretty successful step in the right direction, I think. Now, can you duplicate it and keep taking steps? Those are things that we're going to discuss. And I agree with you that sort of all of their overachievement moments were balanced out with some moments that just simply didn't go very well. So ultimately, I think 7-9 is what they deserved. Could they have maybe squeaked in at 8-8, possibly, and that would have been considered luck and maybe ahead of the curve in terms of the long-term roster reconstruction and rebuild that John Gruden embarked upon when he returned to the franchise back in 2018. Now they've made a bunch of off-season additions. So if we're talking about this as a five Raiders vital to a playoff push, non-quarterback addition, that must be said, Derek Carr will not be involved here.
No Derek Carr.
Why do you think they're in a legitimate playoff contention this season? Is it all off-season moves? Is it some of the guys you saw last year? Probably a mix of both.
Yeah, I think it's a mix of both. I mean, first of all, they just added a lot of talent, right? We talked about the defense is worlds more talented than the 31st ranked DVOA unit that they tried out last year. And I think, I mean, the rookie class from last year, we talked about last pod, is going to get a lot better. They should all improve. Derek Carr's got all the weapons around him he wants. So I think overall it's just a more talented unit, more experienced. They filled a lot of really important holes. So I think I expect them to be legitimate playoff contenders.
Now, when we were brainstorming this particular podcast idea, the goal was to have a unified top five that we would go right down the list, 5-4-3-2-1, most important Raiders other than a quarterback to a legitimate playoff push. We ended up with a pretty significant amount of disagreement, and we're kind of going to argue which of our guys belong in this top five. And then you guys, listeners, viewers, get to vote in a poll to declare me the outright winner. If I recall, the last time we had one of these polls, it definitely went in my favor. Is that right?
I can't you want a poll just to even the score. You need to get back to 500.
I think I definitely do. But nonetheless, there was too much disagreement for us to find enough common ground to make a cohesive top five. So I guess from your vantage point, as you were creating yours, what were the criteria that went into your list? Kind of give the listeners some insight into the logic about as you were selecting which guys you picked, which guys you didn't. Because maybe, obviously, you would think, all right, every list is going to include, you know, Jacobs and Waller and their top tier guys. They're on neither of our lists. Maybe give the listeners a reason why that's the case.
Yeah, I mean, the way I looked at it, one is I took Jacobs, Waller, even Renfro to me off the list because I just expect them to be good. Mm-hmm. There's no variable in Josh Jacobs' game. I expect him to be what he was last year and probably better. Same with Darren Waller. So the way I looked at this list is these five guys are talented. They are veterans mainly on my list, but they're variables, right? They need to either be healthy or they need to be more productive or they need to be healthy and more productive. So I don't have any rookies on my list because I don't think it's fair as much as we might expect of Damon Arnette or Henry Ruggs or Bryan Edwards to say, hey, week one, you got to be vital with this playoff push. I think they have enough veterans on the team to fill that role initially. And I look to those guys on my list to be more.
Yeah, and I had something similar in that you want to choose variables or pivot points on the roster, guys who could either explode or struggle, or there are some question marks about their impact, or maybe just some unknowns because they're new guys. Now, I do have a rookie on my list, and the reason why I included rookies in my thinking, I would say, is because those guys, just like last year, are probably going to be integral impact players. So I just wanted to account for them, and we can get into that kind of as we go down the list. I think, first of all, we should just list our guys, right? And then we can go back and kind of compare and contrast. So just real quick, laundry list, my list of five Raiders vital to a playoff push, non-quarterback edition. Jonathan Abram, the safety. Henry Ruggs, wide receiver. Malik Collins, defensive tackle. Left tackle, Colton Miller. And middle linebacker, Nick Kwiatkowski. Your list.
Yeah, I went Jonathan Abram as well at five. And then I went Trent Brown, Cleveland Furl, Tyrell Williams, and Corey Littleton.
Yeah, and so it's weird because we have disagreements quite often, but our position groups almost match in a very identical way. It's just a matter of maybe the type of impact or the importance of one player over the other. And I think that's going to be kind of a fascinating discussion, but it's very clear that a lot of these areas that we're talking about, other than the offensive line, is about areas of deficiency where the Raiders need to improve. And these types of players can either surge that position group forward into a team strength, or their struggles could either drop it back to 2019 levels or maybe make them worse. So I think that's an interesting point that we agree on the logic of which positions need to improve, but maybe the most important players within it. I think that's going to be a fun discussion as we move forward. Before we get there, let's go to the one area where we actually agreed on something. Jonathan Abram, let's hear your reason about why you think that he's absolutely vital to the 2020 Raiders.
Yeah, I mean, I think him being healthy, I think he's really just going to be a linchpin of this defense and making it a complete unit. We saw last year, I mean, the second he went out starting week two, they struggled to replace him at safety. Eric Harris finally, you know, filled in adequately around week seven after they got Curtis Riley out of there. But then once Carl Joseph went down, it was all downhill, right? I mean, they got picked apart in the deep passing game. The run defense suffered without Abram. I just think that him being healthy allows Demaryius Randall to play the deep safety, and I think it'll make that secondary a more cohesive unit and allows their depth to be more of a factor with Jeff Heath and Eric Harris as the third and fourth safeties as opposed to one and two. So mine with Jonathan Abram, while we don't know what to expect of him, I think his health is vital.
Yeah, and his ability to be a tone setter, not just with laying lumber on unsuspecting tight ends and slot receivers, but just his versatility, but that leadership in the back, somebody who's confident calling out signals. If we go back to his post-draft press conference, right? When Jonathan Abram came to Alameda, John Gruden was saying right away, this is a guy that I identified as a team leader right away. This is a guy that I expect to be able to man and control the secondary. Jonathan Abram is a football junkie. That was very apparent. He was knocking on John Gruden's door a lot back in training camp. He was having film sessions with Derek Carr and with the coaching staff above and beyond, right? That's a role that Jonathan Abram wants to fill. It's one he's comfortable filling. And it's something that they've been missing in addition to the on-field product that you're talking about. I think that he can kind of heighten the back of that secondary in general. And if you have an intimidator back there who has some discipline, we need to see that from him. I think that that can go a long way in setting the tone and making life easier on everybody else in the back. So I agree with you. And I think that, you know, kind of both of us have really painted a picture of why this guy is so important. I think John Gruden knows it. I think John Abram knows it. And I think that he is ready and willing to take on such a big role despite missing his entire rookie season. Now, when it comes to our disagreements here, I think the easiest thing to do is to not say, well, my list is better and here's why and your list is better. It's to maybe, since our position groups match almost identically, right, is just to go over, let's say we can compare and contrast the wideouts, right? So you had Tyrell Williams on your list. I had Henry Ruggs on mine. Why Tyrell, and maybe why Tyrell over Henry or over some of the other options at what was a obvious weakness in last year's offense and one that looks a lot better this year?
Yeah. So, I mean, I had Ruggs as an honorable mention. He barely missed my list. I think, I mean, he's going to be vital. We all know that. The Raiders expect big things from him. He's the number 12 overall pick. Mm-hmm. But to me, I think because wide receivers often struggle initially to have a big impact, and because of the shortened weird offseason, lack of training camp, all that, I mean, Ruggs is going to be good. He's going to be explosive. The Raiders will find ways to get the ball in his hands, but I think it might take a while, a little bit, for him to be that number one option. And Tyrell Williams, when he was healthy, you think week one and part of week two, he was healthy. That was it. Mm-hmm. He showed really good chemistry with Derek Carr, right? He had 11 catches, 151 yards, two touchdowns in the first six quarters of the season. And it was like, okay, we don't need Antonio Brown. So I think if he's healthy, he's shown he can be a good 1B option, which the Raiders will need. They just need someone who can be consistent, solid, who has good chemistry with Derek Carr, and who can be a red zone threat. And Tyrell Williams is all of those things when healthy. So I think having an established veteran who can produce immediately will help Ruggs come along and not put all the pressure on him.
Now, I really like that logic. You're kind of convincing me a little bit because of all this offseason stuff, all these unknowns, and because Tyrell was good and is going to be focused on proving himself as a healthy, functional number one. Now, I think we all agree that as a number two, he's as good as most number twos in the league. And I think having that stabilizing force, right, that maybe early on they will kind of count on the guys Derek Carr knows, Waller and Renfro and Tyrell Williams, who is that outside threat that Waller and Renfro that's a need they don't really fill. The reason why I went with Ruggs and the reason why I feel like even if he's behind in his evolution as an NFL player or in his scheme knowledge, the raw speed changes the way that you are covered. Even if his catch total, or even if he doesn't have every position down or every route that will be added for him eventually, just his presence on the field must be respected. He runs across the field as the ball's being snapped, man in motion. Everybody better be ready for a jet sweep that could go to the house, right? If he all of a sudden takes off on a go route, a safety's going to have to go that way. He just dynamically changes the way the Raiders will be addressed defensively. And that's why I sort of thought, even if he's not at maximum Ruggs, right, just by the nature of him needing to adjust and evolve as an NFL player, I do think that just his mere presence is going to have an impact. It's going to change. And with the volume of weapons that they have, right, from Bowden to Jacobs to Waller to Renfro, all the way down the list, that he will make everyone else's life easier. And that's why I kind of had him there. And again, I want you guys to vote for me preferably, but just, you know, hopefully that you guys can kind of say, all right, even if you don't agree with one list or the other, okay, like I agree with Scott on Ruggs. I agree with Josh on somebody else. You're only going to agree with me. But, you know, kind of go down these selections, and maybe we're kind of splitting hairs sometimes, but I definitely think that there are some fundamental differences, and if you sign one way or the other, please let us know. So Tyrell versus Ruggs, I think the logic is sound on both sides. Now, with this next one, let's move on to the defensive line. You had Cleveland Furl. I had Malik Collins. You went first last time. I'll go first this time. Now, I picked Malik Collins because if you look at when Paul Gunther's defensive scheme has run the best, it's with a dominant three technique. And we bring up Geno Atkins a lot. And also with a caveat that very few people are Geno Atkins. And to assume that Malik Collins is unfair. But we've seen, and we talked about it last week, that his disruptions from the inside, even without a large volume of sacks, is pretty significant. And that's something that, no offense to Deion Jordan or Maurice Hurst or anybody like that last year, but I think that Malik Collins ratchets up the intensity and the respect factor on the inside, and a good inside push changes everything, even for the top tier quarterbacks like Patrick Mahomes, right? It just changes everything. And young quarterbacks like Luck and Justin Herbert can rattle them to death. So that interior presence, something that was a clear upgrade, something that they needed to address, I think that that could fundamentally change the Raiders and how they're able to get pressure up front. That's why I went with Collins there along the defensive line.
Yeah, no, that's great. I don't disagree with anything you said. I think for me, I went with Cleveland because in my opinion, they just need to find a really, really good edge rusher. We don't know if Max Crosby can duplicate what he had last year. We don't know Carl Nassib's role, how good he's going to be. We think he's going to be okay. Cleveland Furl has all the talent. Mm-hmm. Talked about it. He's going to work really hard. He's been grinding. He wants to prove that he deserves to be the number four overall pick. So I do think that Malik Collins, just him being there, is going to make Cleveland Farrell's life so much easier, right? Him getting that inside pressure can help, you know, relieve Cleveland and let him off the edge, hit the quarterback, pressure the quarterback. It might not come in sack totals, but I think they just need a dominant edge rusher, not even dominant, a really good edge rusher who can impact the game in a way that they haven't had. I mean, since I traded Khalil Mack, right? And I think Cleveland Farrell is their best option. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with that. I think that if he can establish himself a little bit more as kind of a dominant force and build off of what he did last year, I think that could be important. I found it odd, and me admitting that I read the YouTube comments, probably not a great thing, but I did. And there was a lot of, I don't know, shots fired, but there were a lot of question marks saying that we were too harsh on Cleveland last pod. I didn't see it that way. I tried to re-listen to it, and I thought that we were pretty complimentary of and putting his progress in perspective, taking away the draft slot and taking away what Crosby was doing and trying to address what he could do well. I thought we were fairly complimentary. Yeah. Did you kind of feel like we were critical last week?
No, I think
we both agree that this is a guy that needs to take steps up, and I think that we believe that it's definitely possible for him to do that.
Yeah, no, I don't think we were overly critical at all. I think we were very fair in just saying that he faced some obstacles, right? The illness, the weight loss, moving inside, moving outside, and all that can be difficult, a lot of pressure. But we also acknowledged, like I said, the immense amount of talent this guy has, how hard of a worker he is, the attitude he brings, the culture he helps build. And I think, I mean, to me personally, I think Cleveland Farrell is going to be a really, really good NFL player. And I think we agree an 8-9 sack a season guy is someone you need. And that's a really good NFL football player. And that's what he can be. I think the ceiling is so high for Cleveland Farrell. That's why he's on my list, because I don't think last year is indicative of the player he is. And I think if he makes a big jump, if he goes to from 4.5 to 7 or 8 sacks and, you know, whatever, 30, 40 pressures, that's going to help this team so much. I mean, you can't even really quantify that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and especially playing such a premium position. I'm curious to see how it's all going to shuffle out, who ends up playing next to Collins more. But I think that's going to be of great benefit on the inside. And I think Maurice Hurst has a little bit of ability, and I think you know, again, why I put Collins there is he's going to make everybody around him better. So that defensive line, just by his presence, my second straight presence pick, could really kind of help everybody across the board and make this defense more dynamic.
When it comes to protecting your business from fire, Bay Alarm brings the best, like industry-leading fire protection systems. With professional design, installation, and 24/7 monitoring, it's one more way fire has met its match. Bay Alarm puts the pro in fire protection. Go to bayalarm.com/NBC Sports for a special offer to all new business customers. Now, more than ever, Bay Alarm. ACO2-ATCL-880138.
All right, now we both picked a flanker on the offensive line. I took Colt Miller, left tackle. You took Trent Brown on the right. Why Trent over Colt Miller over maybe somebody else that you were thinking about?
Yeah, for me, I mean, Trent Brown, I thought, I mean, in an offseason of splashy moves that didn't really pan out, Trent Brown did. He was really good, right? But he's got to stay healthy. I mean, he only played 57% of their offensive snaps last year. And that's just not good enough. He's got to stay healthy, because when he was in there, that offensive line, that is one of the best units in football. And we saw the minute he left, whether it was the ankle, the pec, whatever it was, I mean, it's just not the same, right? All of a sudden, the right side of the line is a little more compromised. The run game is affected. Carr feels a little more pressure. So I think that he, in my opinion, Trent Brown is the key to that offensive line being as good as it is. And if he's there, him and Rodney Hudson, the line goes as they go.
Yeah, and to your, when you included Trent Brown, I immediately thought about what happened last year when he wasn't there, that the right side of that line gets exposed a little bit. And of course, from a starter to any starter to a backup, there's going to be a drop off. But from Trent Brown to, no offense, but David Sharp or even Brandon Parker, that is a monumental shift in what the Raiders are able to do. It leaves an exposure point. And something that you just can't have because of that significant drop off is so wide, and Trent can be so dominant. I think if Gabe Jackson can be healthy and Trent Brown can be healthy, that right side of the line can be really dominant, especially in the run game, because that's something that I think is underrated about what Trent likes to do. It's something that's really good about what Gabe Jackson likes to do. But enough of me making your case for you. I went with Colton Miller, not because, I mean, he's kind of been the opposite of Trent Brown in that he's been an Iron Man during his two NFL seasons. He's played through significant injury as a rookie. He's played more than 1,000 snaps both seasons. He was kind of a sieve his first year while playing hurt. And I thought he got a lot better last year. And we've seen on social media the guys pushing trucks full of offensive linemen around the Las Vegas Metroplex. He's obviously always been strong. He is an athletic and longer guy that I think could maybe have put on strength. And, you know, he's just one of those quiet guys that works hard. So if he makes another step, I think this is more about reliability at a vital point. And while this is a non-quarterback addition, I think him being as stable as possible, him being consistent, whether it's, you know, any of the top edge rushers in this division, he's always had trouble with the Chargers guys, especially Melvin Ingram. If he can kind of just be more stable, I think, than he even showed last year, if he can continue to make those strides, I think, and be one of those, not elite left tackles, but just a very good, solid point on that line without any mistakes, I think that's more important than anything else. It was weird. I was going through some over-the-cap numbers last night. The Raiders have the most expensive offensive line, including their entire depth chart, in all of football. It's more than $55 million just paid in guys up front. It makes sense because Brown makes a lot. Hudson makes a lot. Miller's a first-round draft pick. Jackson isn't cheap. But it's up to that. I think we can both agree that that front has got to be stable at bare minimum and assertive at times when they can build leads and things like that as they move into 2020.
No doubt. I mean, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but they those five didn't play a lot of snaps together.
Right. Very few. Yeah.
Yeah. Incognito missed some games. Jackson missed some games. Then, you know, Trent went on IR. So, I mean, I thought when all five were healthy, they were the best offensive line in football. And I think if Colton can take a leap and Trent can stay healthy, so mine's health based, yours is production based, they can be really good, and that'll be a driving force in a playoff push, is to, you know, pave the way for the run game and then keep Derek Carr upright, because we know when he's upright and has a clean jersey, he's pretty good.
Yeah, and they have deep threats. You need time to work downfield. They have kind of shift to your guys where they may need to get schemed open. Sometimes that takes time. And I think all those things are going to be important as we move forward. The last, again, point of contention, but sort of, but not really, is we both picked linebackers. I picked Nick Kwiatkowski. You picked Corey Littleton. And I'll go first this time. And the reason why I picked Kwiatkowski is because in Paul Gunther's defense, how many times did we hear Paul Gunther say that he needs the middle linebacker to be an extension of him, that his defense is requires a lot of accurate, smart, and quick reads, and that's why he loved Vontaze Burfict so much. And there was a thought that even after everything that happened last year, he could be back in 2020. Obviously, they chose to address that in a more stable fashion. I think that was probably a smart move. So to have that guy in the middle, I think is, you know, really key. And if he's operating well, if he's a three down linebacker, like we all assume that he's going to be, the $7 million per year is kind of makes that really clear. I think that it's going to help this defense overall. If he can get in the right checks, if he can help this defense operate at a level that Paul Gunther wants, if he and Paul Gunther can be attached at the hip in these meetings and understand each other from a cerebral standpoint, again, that type of confidence and the accuracy in what they're doing to avoid coverage mistakes and guys being out of place, if he can assert some discipline to this defense, I think that's going to help them a lot. Now, this is a guy who was a spot starter for a long time until Danny Trevathan went down last year, and we saw a really good football player when he was allowed to be that kind of three down guy. Now he's got money and he's going into a new system, and there are a bunch of hurdles. That's why I think he's a real pivot point and a variable and somebody who's going to be vital to this defense. Talking about all these guys have to be better. They need better and they need stability out of the middle linebacker spot. And I think Kwiatkowski gives it to him.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's a wrong answer in this debate. I think both these guys are very, very, very important, right? I mean, they've had black hole at that position at the linebacker spot for a long time. And they went out and spent big for a reason. I picked Littleton because they paid him a lot of money to be really good. And he's got to be really, really good because that's why they paid him. He's 26. He's at his peak. He's a three-down athletic playmaking linebacker who can cover tight ends and running backs. Yeah. They haven't seen that in silver and black in a while. And it's very, very important if they want to make the playoffs that they don't just get gashed by tight ends and running backs over and over and over again. We saw Tahir Whitehead and Will Compton and all these guys just get threatened, right? And it can't happen. And that's why Corey Littleton's here. He got paid a lot, and we see it sometimes where guys get paid and they have a down year initially. They can't have that, right? He's a really talented guy. He's their most talented defensive player, in my opinion. So he's got to be really good.
Yeah, and I was going over some Pro Football Focus metrics, and you can love them or hate them, but there's one thing that I thought was very clear in terms of tackling efficiency. Yeah. Corey Littleton, who is a three down sideline to sideline guy, right? I think he had 130 tackles. I don't have the number right in front of me. He missed one all year. He was credited with one missed tackle. I think that's incredible. And I think that's vital because missed tackles turn 8 yard gains into 16, right? And allows you to leak extra yards after the catch. His speed and tackling ability, that combination, I think is vital. I mean, it's crazy to think that where this guy has come from being kind of like a special teams maven to really becoming the kind of prototypical modern NFL linebacker and the best, obviously, on the open market. Somebody I think is going to make the Raiders defense, you know, tremendously better. And if he and Nick Kwiatkowski can get together and get in good, you know, have great cohesion and understand maybe not their roles, but play well together, that's something. Talk about something that the Raiders haven't had in a long time. They've had flashes of Navarro Bowman playing good for a couple of weeks or Perry Riley showing up for a couple of weeks, but the partnership, they haven't had something like this in quite some time. I added something here to all of our top five Raiders vital to a playoff push, non-quarterback edition. And we're obviously talking players, right? How about coach? You know, you could look at Edgar Bennett and say, well, the wide receivers have to get better fast. They have a lot of young players that they need to improve. You could look at defensive line coach Rod Marinelli, because the defensive line has to get better, and he has such a sterling reputation of developing and creating dominant defensive fronts. The coach that we're going to talk about today is a step above them in terms of rank, and that's defensive coordinator Paul Gunther. Now, some people ask if the seat's hot. It isn't. It's not, right? But in terms of a coach that really needs to kind of maximize the talent that he has, in my opinion, Paul Gunther is as vital as any wearing a headset to getting this Raiders team going towards the postseason.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I think, I mean, we know a lot of fans are kind of wondering about the hot seat, but I mean, the first 2 years, they didn't have any horses, right? There was just, you can't fire a guy if you don't give him any talent. Now he's got talent, right? They went out and they spent a lot of money. They filled a bunch of holes. They plugged a bunch of holes. The secondary, if Prince Mukamara or Damon Arnett can be good, is complete. They have 2-3 down linebackers and a defensive line that should be okay. So I think if Paul Gunther can, he has to take the defense from 31st, like we said, 31st to 20, 19, 18, right? Make a leap into average, mm-hmm. and then go from there the season after that. But that leap is going to be on him to maximize the talent.
Like you said. Yeah, and I think that the focus shifts towards the coach a little bit more. It's the same defense. He's running the same things. He'll probably make the same play calls in the same types of situations. I'm more of a Paul Gunther guy than maybe some people are. I think he can be creative. I think his defense can be efficient if the right talent is there. But kind of like how we always talk about with Derek Carr, right? That they were kind of built-in excuses that they were rebuilding and they weren't ready and they didn't have the weapons and all these types of things. That Paul Gunther's in a similar spot where he doesn't have the horses, he doesn't have the talent. That's leaving the table of opportunities there to say, all right, well, he doesn't have X, Y, or Z. I think that they're definitely better. Now, are they elite in any position group? Probably not. But I think that they're good enough and they're talented enough that we should be able to see a market improvement. And if we don't see a market improvement, then you got to ask a lot of questions. That's why I think that, you know, we can both agree that he's kind of included there. Now, we've given our predictions before and said that we think that they're close to being a playoff team, but will they or won't they? You know, that we both kind of hovered around 9-7, 10-6. We have the extra playoff spot. Talked about the tough division. Will the guys that you mentioned, will they push this team into the postseason?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we've talked about it. I think I've been at 9-7. I think I'm still at 9-7. I might be at 8-8, but I think extra playoff spot. I think they can sweep the Chargers, maybe get the tiebreaker over the Broncos, and get the seventh seed.
Yeah, and that's the seed that I am kind of looking at too. And it could be intriguing, you know, coming down the stretch. But I do think all these guys that both of us have mentioned are going to be important. And you know, a lot of these guys, it's just a matter of, you know, what your preference is in terms of guys that you would want to pick. But once again, if you're listening to this podcast, log on to Twitter. We're going to have a poll up there. Just a quick recap for Josh. Yeah, Jonathan Abram, Tyrell Williams, Cleveland Furl, Trent Brown, and Corey Littleton, the winning team, has Jonathan Abram, Henry Ruggs, Malik Collins, Colton Miller, and Nick Kwiatkowski. Man, I'm getting good at saying that name. So you be the judge. Tell us who's smart and who's dumb. I think last time I was wearing a dunce cap for a week. But nonetheless, thank you guys so much for joining the Raiders pod. Another good one. We'll be back at this thing again on Friday. Also, log on to the website. Check out Josh's story explaining his five Raiders needed for a playoff push. They have a chance. Yep. They have a chance. Can they cash in?
Playoffs.
Playoffs. Can they cash in on that opportunity? So thank you guys so much for listening and downloading, and we'll talk to you on Friday.
Thanks, guys.
Raiders Insider Podcast on NBC Sports California.com.